There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Hello, welcome to the Autocar Podcast, my week in cars with Matt Pryor, that's me, and Steve Cropley is over there. Stephen, we have a letter from Rob Delicato. I haven't primed you about this, and I probably should have done. There is potential for, embarrassment, shame, whatever. Mm. So Rob recently bought and promptly wrote off a car.
Oh, dear.
Classic car that he had lusted after since he was a teenager.
Oh, poor fellow.
Clearly had been loved for 33 years by others and then sold to me with the expectation that I would continue to cherish and maintain it. I feel grateful no one was hurt, and in cold terms, the only loss is financial. But I can't help feeling I've destroyed a fabulous thing that was entrusted to me to look after it. I'm also slightly embarrassed that despite my experience, I was unable to keep it on the road. Did either of you write a car off? And how do you feel about it afterwards? That's the other thing. That's the thing. How do you feel about the damage?
I think I'll be upset, but I... Oh, God. Oh, no. First of all, sorry for the poor fellow. Yeah. What's a car?
It's not specific, but I think it's a. I think it was a Jaguar.
Right. I think
it's a Jaguar of some kind.
Oh dear. So. Well, I mean, sympathy. I've never done it. I've never had any. Oh God, touch wood somewhere. I've never done it. No, I've never had anything stolen.
Oh.
So, okay. I had a motorcycle stolen briefly, but I found it around the corner.
Oh, that's cool.
But
is that one of those they take it, park it somewhere to see if it's got a tracker and.
No, I think there was an old Triumph. Was it an old Triumph 650 years ago? They just sort of
that's where it
got
stopped.
On and thought, oh, it's a bit crap in it. So, what the hell did he want that for? But no, I never have written one off. But I think I would take it on the chin because I've just on the basis of other behaviour. Whenever something leaves, I never look back. I just never...
Oh, interesting.
The only thing I've ever re-bought is this Honda that I've just 750. I just bought the XADV, which is in the rag this over Christmas. And there's a little bit about it. It's just a Honda. Mm. Large Honda scooter. Mm. And once I sold my previous one, I discovered I liked it. Oh. But I do feel sorry for this bloke, and I bet what's his name?
Rob.
But bad luck, Rob.
Yeah, it's awful. I mean, it's just. Yeah.
Oh, but I don't think guilt's appropriate because he didn't do it deliberately. Accidents happen. I really think people sort of cudgel themselves for things they can't really prevent. So, you know, sorry and all that, but as long as you're protected by the insurance, I just never mind.
Yeah, I think that's fair. Yeah. Don't let it get to him, Rob.
Yeah.
That's the short bit. I've reassured him about his feeling bad because when I was 18, so my brother had restored a Mini 1000 with my dad. I mean, it wasn't worth a lot of money, but they'd spent, you know, a while doing it, and it was my brother's first car, and then my mum ran it for a while. And then when I turned 18, passed my driving test, I started running around in it for about a fortnight until I ran it into a pretty large oak tree nearby. And that was the end of the Mini and my two front teeth.
Oh.
And I felt awful about it.
Yeah.
But the nice thing is that my brother now only mentions it maybe once every 2 to 3 months.
How was he at the time? Pretty cheesed off.
He had moved out by that point, so that was easy. I think everybody did that thing, well, as long as you're all right.
Yeah.
And then they go away and they're like if you put any damage on a press car. No, don't worry. As long as you're all right, as long as nobody's hurt, doesn't matter.
mumble.
But I felt awful. So I think that was of some comfort to Rob. That,
anything since then, though?
I've written off, no. I mean, I've did damage a Lotus Exige once when I was less experienced and a bit stupider. But no, nothing. No, again, touch wood, nothing serious.
Yeah, well, we're both gripping this wooden table.
Exactly. A couple of curved alloys, but you know, we can live with
that. What a horrible feeling that is.
Oh, there's that noise. I've done it on that Genesis I've got outside. I can't believe I did it. But anyway.
So outside today is the F-Type. This is the last trip I'm going to make in it because it gets swapped tomorrow. The wheels are pristine, and I'm kind of driving down the road like a sort of complete thunderhead, you know, because I just want to. I'm so desperate to give this thing back with the wheels okay,
and exactly
something's going to happen in the next 50 miles.
Oh, mate, there'll be a pothole if nothing else. Let's talk your column a bit. You saw the Caterham Project V5?
Yeah.
V.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I was just struck by the closeness of the dimensions and also the duty, I guess. Of the thing to the A110, and that I was just thinking that's a car I could move on to, especially since it looks so amazing. I mean, you went to see didn't you?
I didn't see the car because I couldn't fit it into the schedule, but I did go to see Bob Lashley and Anthony Gianarelli, who designed it as well, which
really
is a good looking,
impressive guy,
good looking thing. Yeah, really, yeah, really good. Was he there?
All I saw was a taped interview with him, but I thought he was terrific.
Yeah.
I just love the professionalism of it. You know, because we've seen a few other administrations at Caterham have a go at things, haven't we? And they've never this could have been done by a big OEM, except it's been done faster and with less, you know, hoo-ha.
Yeah. So just explain what it is in detail for those who don't know it so well.
Well, it's an A110 sized car with a composite body and a battery pack that allows you to sit with your bum on the floor. So the battery's split twice, isn't it? There's a little bit under your calves, so it elevates your feet a little bit.
Oh, yes. Okay.
And then and then there's another load of battery behind you, and they're two-wheel drive, fairly simple.
Mm.
But the thing I admire is that they've kept the weight down, and they've kept the dimensions pretty sensible. Yeah. So I think it is it looks really viable to me. I like the look, and I think the shape of it's a joy. It just very few cars you see that really light your fuse these days. I mean, everything's competent, but not that many get my emotions going anyway. And I really found that appealing.
Mm.
I do see it as a possibility.
Oh, for you to own?
Yeah, a couple of years away, though, isn't it?
Yeah, still, I think so. Yeah.
26,
yeah, there's still quite a lot of dev work to do, you would think. But yes, I agree with you about the design, and that's not easy to do in a car that has a 2+.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it's a 2+ one seating arrangement, isn't it? But it's got a small rear seat.
Now, I got all juiced up about the 2+1 because we built back in the TWR days, we were offered the opportunity to act as customer to TWR's design department. And we proposed a 2+1 car that was called the 3PV, three-person vehicle, which is not very, we just couldn't think of a sensible name. But it was, it didn't look like that, but it was a sort of 2+1 car.
Mm.
And I believe passionately in that format, because I think it allows a car to be small, because middle person's, you know, feet can go up the middle. And I think a couple plus someone else, a kid or two kids and a parent is just a likely format.
Yeah, it worked for me when I ran a Toyota GT86 for a while.
Of course,
and did the school run quite a lot in it with two teenagers.
Yeah,
and you have one in the back and the passengers.
How big is the back?
I mean, you can fit four people in a GT86 if you want to. And actually, I think it's a surprisingly practical car because you can sling the rear seats backs down as well to give you a full load through from the boot. So I think it's
That would be a possibility for you, wouldn't it?
I'd love one. Yeah, I may well yet at some point have one, I think. But anyway, yeah, the idea that you can... It just adds an extra dimension that you don't get with a two-seater, do you? You
know, yeah.
It just becomes a viable, probably second family car, but still, you know, a useful family
car. I find even with the F-Type, big car, big wide car, powerful and all that, can do anything. But there... The fact that it's a two-seater just provides too many reasons for leaving it at home.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I've done a lot of miles in it, God knows, but they've all been long haul. And, you know, for short haul around our place, it's the missus said, we'll say, we're going in the duster, are we? And we are.
You know? There you are. Yeah. Yeah. And I suppose because it's an EV, it looks like a mid-engined car, but it's not strictly a mid-engined car.
No,
and also you don't have to have a transmission tunnel through from the gearbox through to the gear lever or anything else. So
there's some really good visuals, aren't there? And they show that there's a kind of bum space, you know, and your feet are elevated a bit, not just like a Formula One car. It's not exaggerated in that, but this is we're talking about Caterham, aren't we?
Yeah,
I think it's clever.
Mm.
And but not unnecessarily complicated. I'm really looking forward to the day.
Yeah, me too. Yeah, me too. I think it's the idea of VT Holdings, isn't it? Who are the parent company?
Yeah,
Japanese big dealer network and importer and
that's
stuff
it.
In Japan.
Yeah, they started off as that was how they were profiled, the Japanese Caterham importer, aren't they? Mm. With other Fisher Fry, of course.
Yeah.
But no, I'm impressed. I think I didn't give them enough credibility when, you know, they started saying this is the idea of the Japanese importer who now owns the company or a lump of the company. I thought, oh dear, this is another one. But then I saw the car and Anthony Gianarelli, as you say, impressive.
Yeah, yeah.
Good luck to him.
Yeah.
But it doesn't show how good you've got to be now. You know... remember, it's not so long since that the sort of low volume thing was full of have a go heroes, but now you've got people who just are in the upper echelons of engineering.
Yeah,
really are. Right.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, interesting. Yeah, I didn't realise the Ford Heritage Centre has moved.
Yeah, it was. I know about this because of my connection with the British Motor Museum. We have got a deal with Ford Heritage Centre to have a rolling 10 cars that we borrow from Ford because BMM has a Vauxhall collection and it's appropriate, therefore, to have a decent representation of Ford. Mm. You know, cat and dog, I see them as.
Yeah.
But, the Ford Heritage Centre contains 100 vehicles. It's Ford, you probably don't know this either because I didn't. There's a mammoth spare parts centre up there, biggest in Europe, or was.
Mm.
I believe the building is something like the largest single-storey building in Europe.
Oh, really? Anyway, and that's in Daventry, near Daventry.
Yeah, outskirts. And if you want a fan belt, mate, that's a place to go. but anyway, there were some redundant offices, and in this sort of U-shape around a big building... Very nicely, you know, good facilities and good order and all that. And because it's office space, it's been cleared of all the carpet tiles and so on and new floor put in.
Hmm.
So they parked these vehicles, organised them very nicely. So there's commercials one end and then there's concept cars and then there's all the stuff we know about, Model Ts and Ford Pilots and all that. Then the more prosaic stuff, and then a whole bunch of really good competition cars.
Hmm.
You know, race escorts, rally escorts, and things. Hmm. And it's a joy to go around. And there's an excellent bloke called Len Keane who's been connected with quite a long time, and he's got one assistant, a guy called Chris Smith.
Hmm.
I don't know how they get done what they've got done because it's the amount of organisation is fantastic.
Hmm.
And Len Keane's got other fleet stuff to do in the company too.
Oh, really?
So he must work night and day.
Yeah.
Anyway, it's great. But to go there, you've got to make an arrangement with Len Keane. So you find him online and he's very willing and he takes you around personally.
Mm.
But they're not going to have a situation where you just wander through.
Right.
So if you belong to the MG Owners Club and you can get 100 people together, they'll, you know, you go up there. Mm. You've got all the cars are open, so you can sit in them.
Oh, wow.
It's good.
Yeah.
And when you see a clump of Fords, you know, a few, well, more than 100 years of Fords, it is a great sight.
Yeah. Yeah.
So
these are the cars that used to live in
Dagenham.
Yeah. In a sort of big blue steel shed slash workshop.
But there was
some covers and
was carefully placed next to a gravel crusher, so everything was covered in about an inch of dust.
Oh, yeah,
remember that?
Yeah, yeah,
terrible.
Yeah, big plastic sheets over everything just to
but
be.
But now it's all
sure.
pristine.
Oh, that's cool.
It's a happy home for the cars.
Mm.
And they've done. I think they must have some storage elsewhere, so the cars are. They don't repeat themselves.
Mm.
And I went up there to borrow a Capri, which is, you know, there'll be a story in that one of the Christmas issues about running a 1977 Capri for a week.
Excellent. In a ULEZ compliant manner.
Yeah, is that's that right? It's got to be 40 years old, and this car's 46 years old. It was a lot better than I expected. Still a bit of a stretch, I think. But but some people would find it fine. But I'm a bit addicted to lovely steering and all that. And the steering, I'm afraid, unassisted.
Yeah. Ooh,
steering with a steering wheel rim similar in diameter to a shoelace.
Mm.
You know, it's not like real steering.
No. So maybe if you live and work in town and you do most of your travel on the scooter or the tube, and then you just get a car out for the B&Q run at the weekend.
Yeah.
Off to see grandma.
I could see that happening.
Capri.
Absolutely. And everybody loves the car. You know, the thing is, there's two bunches of people. There are the people who know Capris very well, and everybody says to you, "Oh, watch the tail, you know, tail happy and roundabouts, mate."
Yeah.
Didn't find that, actually.
Mm.
But there are kids who don't know the car, and they just look at it and see you think it's a cool car.
Oh, interesting.
They just respond to the shape. You know, the Philip, the designer, did well.
Mm.
Really well.
Yeah. Capri as a name coming back, we think.
Yeah, there's talk, isn't there, of but it's not a coupe. It's going to be some sort of crossover.
Will it be a compact electric crossover?
I guess.
Yeah. Of the kind that you hardly get any of these days.
Yeah, they're hard to find, aren't they?
What was I going to say about Capris?
Did you ever own one?
No, I've never driven one. I don't think I've ever sat in one. But I was a kid of the mid-70s, so there were a lot around in my youth in the sort of 80s and stuff, so I remember them fondly.
2.8i was a good thing.
Yeah.
I got pretty juiced about the V6s. There were 3-litre V6, pretty crude, 60s, but meaty engine, nice old Essex 3-litre V6.
That's cool. You were looking at the top of the sales charts recently.
Oh, yeah, I just amused by the fact that there were these two totally disparate cars, though. Datsun Dero and the Tesla Model Y were within 200 cars of one another at the end of October for supremacy in the European market.
Mm.
And it seemed that the market's an amazing thing at the moment. It doesn't know what it wants, really.
Yeah.
But although the talk is that the Model Y will now kick on,
okay,
and become Europe's top seller. But one was 184, 800, and the other one was 185 grand. The 1,000 vehicles, I mean.
Yeah.
So it just seemed amazing to me that with a couple of months to run, they were within 200 units of one another.
Yeah. Presumably, the Dacia does more to private buyers. So
very
people
much so.
Spending their own cash.
Yeah.
Now the most popular way to spend your own money.
Yeah. Dacia have been, I believe, building the most popular private purchase car for a long time.
Mm.
And why not, really?
Mm.
You know, you just... I keep looking at mine. I mean, I'm going to... I already cut this bit.
No, not at all.
But honestly, I look at the size, I look at the spec, I look at what I paid for it, and I look at that every time I... You know, press the button and look at the fuel consumption and it says 58.7. Yeah. You know, I just think, oh, God. And if it snows, I'll go click, click with a little dial and it'll, it'll pull up four-wheel drive and we'll plod on.
Yeah.
Okay. And it's damn hard to think of anything else that I could own that would give me that kind of practical satisfaction.
Mm.
There'll be others, I suppose.
A lot to be said for that, isn't there? That all round.
Yeah.
As you say, it's just a car you will just get in it.
Yeah.
Over so many other things, just because it's so easy to use.
I'm so wedded to cars like that.
Yeah.
I really am.
Yeah. I totally get that. Totally get that. Steve and I are going to take a very short break. Yes, we have two Christmas issues this year, don't we? Which is why, and one of the Capri feature is in the second of the two Christmas doubles.
I think so, yeah.
Anyway, you can keep on top of all of those and what's coming and when over at autocart.co.uk, or you can subscribe at themagazineshop.com. Also makes a great present if you leave this podcast open somewhere for your partner to hear it and think to themselves, what a good idea.
What a good
present that would be. So yeah, we'll take a quick break. Steve and I will be back in just a moment.
What car would you buy if you could buy any car? What car would you buy if you knew you could save thousands? What car would you buy if you could compare the latest offers from approved dealers? What car would you buy if you could do all of this in one place in just a few simple clicks? And where would you go to buy that car? What car? Car buying made easy. Visit whatcar.com to buy your next new car.
Hello, welcome back to My Week in Cars. You can write to us, autocar@haymarket.com. That's right, isn't it? Autocar@haymarket.com?
Yeah.
Yeah, brain freeze there for a moment. Do you remember last week we had a letter from Will, who is one of our lads, who has got a Z4. So Duncan, an electrician I know, writes to say, tell that Will chap with the Z4 he needs to buy two salmon relays from BMW and it will be all good. Now, Duncan is a genius. He diagnosed my faulty electrics in this house after I'd had an electrician round and couldn't find it. And Duncan said, mate, it will be somewhere in your kitchen. Search every single cupboard, every single nook, every single cranny. There'll be something in there. Kitchen fitter would have done something. It's very unusual it'd be water damage. I know you get rats, but it'll be very unusual it's rats. There'll be something in your kitchen somewhere. Just look everywhere.
And what was it?
It was one of the ovens.
Ha!
It was the baffling top microwave oven type thing, which we never use. And I was just going through all the cupboards, found sockets and switches I didn't know existed behind packets of rice and stuff like that. And then I noticed that there was the light wasn't on the top oven.
Yeah.
It was on the others. The clock was working. And I thought, that's on a different circuit. No idea. Ooh. No idea. Pulled it out and there was it was plugged into an extension cable.
Wow.
15 years ago,
which
has got cobwebs all over it and shorted the whole thing out. Unplugged it. Job's done. Yeah. Fixed. Saved me hundreds of pounds. So Will, you should, do try taking Duncan's advice and let us know how that goes. Two relays, 20 quid each. I mean, if that works.
Can he fit him himself?
I think so, yeah. I think you just find the place and they look like normal, like hazard warning relays or something.
Oh, wow.
I'm making the hand gestures to demonstrate to you, which I realise is no use to anybody on the pod. But anyway, like a little 3-4 pronged square thing that you just plug in.
Oh, well.
I mean, if it is that.
Yeah.
Because Will was told $4,000.
Oh, my word.
So we'll see.
Think of the number of times this friend of yours must have fixed people's problems.
And,
Save them money.
For no reward at that.
Wouldn't case. I'd love to understand electrics, wouldn't you?
Yeah. As time goes on a bit, I'm trying to a bit more, and I'm getting better at it. Because
I think you did quite well to spot the problem with the oven.
Yeah, maybe, because I did fail my electronics and control systems module in my second year at university because it was beyond me. But as time goes on, I'm starting to think maybe it is a bit easier to understand. You know, you just get a multimeter reading, go, well, there's something here, and then you try it somewhere else and go, there's nothing here, They're easier than carburetors. Let's put it that way.
Yeah.
Anyway. Another Duncan Ward writes, and this is, actually, we've touched a bit on this earlier. Duncan is British, but lives in California, runs a Tesla Model S plaid, California compliance Fiat 500. Presumably that's a Fiat 500e, is it? I would think, but maybe it's not. Anyway, and a Rivian R1T.
Right.
In addition to a number of previous EVs, including a 2011 Nissan Leaf. The running costs of all have been incredibly low, says Duncan. That's something he thinks that people don't talk about enough when it comes to running one. None of them have ever needed anything other than tyres and bulbs, although the Tesla's appetite for tyres is quite alarming. Yeah. No servicing, no breakdowns, no gearbox rebuilds, not even any brake pads. Compare that to how much I've spent on repairs and servicing to various Porsches, TVRs, Lotuses and AMGs. And as well, because he's got solar panels on the house.
Mm.
Anyway, time for us, I think, to appreciate how lucky we are to be at the beginning of a mobility revolution.
I agree with him.
I think I agree with him. I mean, he still loves internally combustible cars, it should be said.
Yeah, the rider always has to be the same, doesn't it? You know, just because you welcome the future doesn't mean to say that you sort of hate the past. I think that there's no face-off to me. But no, I think he's right. And the speed, the sheer speed of development is absolutely breathtaking. There's so many things that, you know, I can remember driving from a year or 18 months ago, and you sort of think, oh, that's a bit behind the times now.
Yeah.
You know, look, I mean, it's possibly not what you should say, but I mean, the Jaguar I-Pace is an old car now. Mm. You know, I don't mean it's a bad car, but the proposition, you know, the idea of an expensive car with you know, a bit too much grunt probably and a bit too much complication and too high a price. And, you know, if that car had been 55 or 62 or something like that, you could imagine it being more relevant now.
Yeah. As far as it, because we did the, whenever, was it 2015, 17? Oh, my goodness.
When we did the story.
Yeah, when it came out. But anyway, at the time, I remember somebody saying, what do you reckon? Somebody from Jaguar saying, what do you think? I said, I think it's probably the best electric car in the world.
Yeah.
But now it's not by a distance.
Still dynamically good, though, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, it's still enjoyable.
Rides well, steers well.
But if you were to sit down and say, right, make a list of the 10 best EVs, the world's 10 best EVs, would it be on it?
Not sure.
Maybe.
Don't think so. Maybe. Sneak in.
I still like it.
You see secondhand ones in the 30s, though.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So that's getting low.
Yeah. Duncan does say, range anxiety on a road trip, or more likely, will the charger work anxiety, is a problem on anything other than the Tesla, in his experience in California.
Yeah.
But manufacturers are getting to grips with it.
He's really put his money where his mouth is.
He certainly has. Whether solar panels on your house will keep EVs cheap is a different matter, because at some point you're going to have to start paying tax on that.
Yeah.
Because the government will lose road tax and want it back. Maybe not in the States. And but I think that's fair, actually, because if you've got a big house with solar panels, you should not have cheaper energy to drive than somebody who lives in a flat and does not have solar panels.
No.
You know, you should pay the same amount of tax on the electricity.
I agree.
You use.
But I suppose his general point, which is, aren't we lucky at the moment, is a good one.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, I think so.
And the day will come when people will be writing, you know, whole examinations of this era, won't they? You know, then this happened, then that happened. Look how amazingly quickly things developed.
Yeah.
So, you know, like the way there's a bit of Concorde stuff around at the moment, and people are saying, could you realise that the distance between, you know, the DC-3 and Concorde is about half an hour, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah. Isn't it something like Concorde was... because it went out of service 20 years ago, wasn't it? 20 years ago last week, something like that.
Yes, that's it.
But isn't there something ridiculous like 13 years between the Lancaster bomber and Concorde or something ridiculous like that?
Crazy business.
Yeah. And I'd like to have supersonic airline travel.
Yeah.
Again.
Yeah. Yeah, of course.
I'd like that. I think that would be...
Certainly suit you, just having arrived from, the listener does not know, you've just arrived from New York, having suffered bum paralysis for whatever it was.
You know, it's still not that bad. It's less than 6 hours, isn't it? But I was on a trip the other day with a journalist we know very well who said he was thinking this might be his last long-haul flight for carbon-related reasons.
Really?
And then he caveated and said, you know, until the next one, I imagine. But he's trying to fly less, which is commendable. But the technology exists already today to fly in a net zero or it's just that we choose not to employ it at the moment.
Yeah.
But if you want to, you could run stuff on hydrogen. You could make that hydrogen greenly if we chose to. It's not beyond the wit of us.
That's what the lads from Bloodhound are trying to prove, isn't it? That they can set a record running on zero emissions or e-fuels and hydrogen peroxide. Yeah. You know, it's coming. It's coming. I think we... I always feel a bit frustrated that we all sit around cudgeling ourselves for not doing something when there's really quite a lot of strong moves towards the goal we all want.
Yeah.
You've still got to live your life.
Yeah. 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 And I think we should find
a bit of politics there.
Better ways to do things rather than not to do things.
Yeah.
But I think some of the you should not do things is that sort of slightly politics of envy that I don't like at all.
Me neither.
Mercedes. Oh yeah, you went to Milton Keynes the other day, a town near me which I like very much. Was it a city now?
I suppose it must be a city. Does a city mean it's got a cathedral or something?
Well, it doesn't have to anymore. There were moves to make some towns cities, and I can't remember whether it was certainly on a short list, but I don't know whether it happened.
Pretty big place anyway.
But I digress. Anyway, I have a bit of a soft spot for Milton Keynes, but you were there to drive some Mercedes-Benzes.
Yeah, Mercedes HQ is there, Tongweld, and they did something which I wish more manufacturers would do, which is just got out all of their interesting cars.
Mm-hmm.
I was there for the EQE SUV, which is a mighty, huge, extremely elaborate 110 grand potato-shaped car.
Makes the potato look attractive.
It looked okay. It's just a bloody big, capsule thing.
Yeah, it is a city, by the way.
It's a nice car.
Yeah.
But they had everything. And, we were able to drive various cars. I really enjoyed it. And it was just something I wish manufacturers would do more often, because we enjoyed it.
What is an EQE? Is that E-class sized?
Yes, yeah, so E-class sized, but there's an SUV version. There's a sort of taller version of it, I believe.
Right.
And, it's a good thing. It was... anyway, I was rattling on, wasn't I, about the... I always loved that. I bought a Mercedes-Benz when I was a boy. My cars went... First new car, Cortina 1600E. Which I sold rapidly, having driven it across a Nullarbor plain in Australia and damaged it, or sort of caused it to creaky body and not very good suspension. Sold it and bought a Fintail Mercedes-Benz. And I did that because I had a teacher at school a few years earlier who had a Mercedes. And I just believe the Mercedes ethos, which is, the beautiful way the doors shut and all that stuff. And the quality was different. From everything else in those days, and they had their slogan was engineered like no other car.
Mm-hmm.
I always believed it. I've gone through my life believing it. I still believe it, really. And they ditched it. They ditched the world's best slogan in favor of, do you remember for a while they were using that quote from Carl Benz, I think, which said, the best or nothing. And I could imagine people saying, well, nothing, mate.
Maybe it's nothing.
Yeah. I've
tried those steering wheel haptic response buttons. Maybe they're nothing.
Yeah.
But yeah. I get really frustrated when they ditch strap lines that have won people over for decades and decades and decades.
There
and then introduce something that means nout.
Yeah. I went around a Tokyo show one time collecting them because the Japanese went through a big period of liking them.
Yeah.
And there was... there were things like Inspire the Next and all that kind of stuff. And I had about 20 of them.
Mm.
And so, I regret the departure of Engineered Like No Other Car. And every time we get anywhere near anybody in authority at Mercedes-Benz, I always turned myself into a blowhard.
You tell him you should do it.
Yeah.
So I wrote a column about some of these some time ago.
Was that where was that? Did you go on a motorsport collection junk job?
Oh no! It was about stupid phrases, catchphrases, track lines that went. Oh. And there was one I think called Intelligent Motion, and maybe it was Mitsubishi, but I can't quite remember. But I wrote in my column a bunch of them, a big group of them, again. That right, these are what they are, and I made one up and put it in the middle. And nobody ever wrote it when you made that one up.
That probably means it's retailable, mate.
You
could probably
I could have
go
sold
and sell it,
it
to somebody
I could
for
have done
50
some,
grand.
Yeah, exactly. Some agency would have wanted that.
Yeah.
No, where will we go with that? But anyway, what's the EQE like?
I liked it. I thought it was a big car, but very, you know, that same amazing creamy low speed ride like the BMW i7's got.
Yes.
There's sort of some of that.
Oh, that's good.
It's a bit taller, so you sit up in the air, and therefore that business of being displaced sideways, a bit more roll rock just because of you're further up from the road. But the actual rolling comfort, terrific.
That is quite good on some of the latest EVs, isn't it? That ride isolation is really good.
Yeah.
Really. That i7, I can't remember a car that rides that.
No, I keep, we keep on saying to people, even, you know, the sort of Bentleys of this world, have you driven a 97?
Yeah. Mind you, it does weigh 2.8 tons, so that's probably, that will go some way.
Got a bit to do
come way to assisting
mass
body,
damping,
body
flat.
In cars which have an increasing number of outward looking safety features, keeping assist, radars, cameras, so on and so forth. Who takes responsibility when it goes wrong? When it goes wrong. Because you were driving a car the other day that told you could do 100 miles an hour because it saw it on the back of a French school trip coach. 100 on the back.
Yeah.
The thing flashes up. And if you then go and do 100 miles an hour, that's still your problem, isn't it?
Basically. Yeah, I would think so.
Yeah.
I don't think... I suppose there'll be some legal get out, you know, ignorance of the law is no blah, 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 you know.
Yeah.
There's no protection. I think that's the story.
There has to come a point with adaptive driver assistance systems and points where, and there was a story about this the other day, which I might do a column in future about, actually, in the near future. I think a manufacturer in the small print had written, you can do this, you can do that, you can drive with hands off and blah, blah, blah. But by the way, it's still your call.
Yeah.
And I don't ever see a situation.
It's interesting.
Hard to see a situation where that changes. And they say, don't worry, we accept full responsibility for anything that goes wrong.
Yeah.
Because
I've heard this said. Because, you know, Matej Rimac was over here. I mean, the world's smartest guy was over here setting up a tech center, and we started talking about this stuff, because he's well into autonomous driving. He's got a whole other wing that he hasn't really come to notice, but they're working away on it. And he said, I was saying, yes, but what about the two problems, the insurance and the who's responsible for accidents? He said, that's easy, we are. He said, we need to make our gizmos so foolproof and idiot-proof that they can't, they will not go wrong. And he was so positive about it.
That's a tall order, though, isn't it?
Well,
don't you think?
You'd think. I said, that's a tall order. and he said, nope, that's the way it's... I think the other thing is that he further believes that because... Even if there is an amazing freak accident occasionally, the number of accidents, normal accidents that are prevented amount to the one cataclysmic accident amounts to a smaller investment or something, or all the repair cost or whatever I mean. But it, to me, it's,
well, here's the
it's a brain stretcher.
Here's the thing, right? How many... Isn't it something like 1.5 million road-related deaths across the globe every year?
Yeah.
So there's a lot. And most of those will be human error related at some point. Maybe at some point along the thing. How many is acceptable for those to be automated deaths?
Oh, God.
And for it to be still all right.
Yeah.
There is a chance you would be 1,500% safer driving every day with a computer controlling what you do.
Yeah.
But would you still go, no, it's all right, I think I'll do it myself, thanks.
Yeah.
Well, and I think there's a very big difference between people accepting accidents with human error and machines that may still go very badly wrong. And even though they are safer by a huge magnitude, whether that's still okay or not.
I sort of see a speed split. I could imagine entrusting myself to a automated driving if I was going from, you know, somewhere pretty congested in London to somewhere else pretty congested in London, and the gizmo was figuring it all out, and we didn't go over 25 miles or 20 miles an hour.
Yeah.
Just don't know whether I'd be the same if we were doing 80 miles an hour up the M4. Don't know.
That's interesting, isn't it? Although 80 miles an hour up the M4 is probably the safer place. Yeah. And that is the other thing, is that if those situations were geofenced, because you're not going to get pedestrians, you're not going to get so many vulnerable road users, everybody's going the same direction.
Yeah.
But that is actually just automating what are already the safest places to drive.
So anyway. It's a bit of a waste. So, it's a certain amount of wasted effort.
Yeah,
you're right.
But you could see why a manufacturer might say, yeah, we will, on these stretches, when you put it on there, we will accept liability for that.
I get the problem.
But it's, more to come on this, I think.
Ensuing
years. Yeah. Meanwhile, we'll finish. And finally, cat up a tree. And finally, people spend 44 hours a year searching for car parking spaces.
Well, this was a piece of, one of those pieces of PR research that falls in the door. This piece of PR research fell in the door. And it just made me think of what Mrs. the steering committee always says, which is park 200 yards away further and walk.
Yeah.
And
totally for that.
It is amazing to me that you know, if you go to the supermarket, there are people who are desperate to squeeze their Passat estate to the, as close as possible to the front door, whereas over there, just within sight, there'll be a load of car parking spaces. I never understand it. Even world's laziest bloke.
As if.
Would rather buy an electric something or other than walk. But I still don't get it.
I will go end of row, tucked as far as I can over to the edge of that bay as possible.
Yeah,
and it's far away as possible
to try not to get
somebody dinged into the doormat and that sort of thing.
Yeah,
but 44 hours searching for cars
in a year. Yeah,
in a year.
So 2 days.
That's a lot, isn't it?
Cheers. Two long days.
That is a lot. On the subject of occasional PR things that drop through the door, I've just opened the Haymarket automotive inbox.
Yeah.
Unread messages right now, 45,288.
Really?
Yeah. We do try to, in fact, we do pretty well, actually. Chris, who edits the letters page in particular, is our sort of chief sub, writes the archive thing. He opens, reads, replies to most of the, I think, as many of the actual people writing to us as he can, and very few fall through the net, I think. But yeah, we do get quite a lot of.
Yeah, boy, that's a scale that I wasn't aware of.
Yeah, I don't know how many, when you consider how many of them are read as well. But I mean,
you slightly wonder how many of them are saying, "Dear sir, you are an idiot."
It's best not to ask.
No,
it's best not to find out. Best not to read the comments.
Indeed.
Well, that brings us to the end of episode 64, I think, of My Week in Car.
64.
Steve and I will be back this time next week. In the meantime, you can find Autocar over at autocar.co.uk. There is a full review of the Hyundai Ioniq 5N over on the YouTube.
Oh, this is your piece.
That's a good car.
Really looking forward. I
really enjoyed that car.
Want to have a go.
really, really, actually, my column was about it this week as well, so which is in the mag as we speak. I think actually will be put online at some point in the future as well. Where else are we? Autocar.co.uk. Themagazineshop.com, of course, where there were some Black Friday deals. I suspect they have come to an end, but it's still worth checking out, pre-Christmas deals, and also includes full access to the 128, soon to be 129-year autocar archive.
Yeah, there you go.
Anyway, till next week. Cheerio.